I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. President Obama has been dogged for years about his birth certificate and his citizenship. And one of his most vocal critics has been Donald Trump, who claimed he sent a team of investigators to Hawaii to get to the bottom of the controversy. Trump has never revealed what he found, and besides, the president is a U.S. citizen. Now Trump has leveled a similar charge against his Republican rival, Senator Ted Cruz. Here he is on Morning Joe last week.
It's a problem for him, and it's a problem, obviously, for the Republicans, because if the Democrat, let's assume he got a nomination, and the Democrats bring suit. The suit takes 2 to 3 years to solve. So how do you run? So it's certainly a concern, I guess, for the party. But I hope that's not the case. I'm not involved in that. But a lot of people are bringing it up. Absolutely.
Ted Cruz was born in Canada and his mother was born in Delaware. And according to most legal scholars, Cruz meets the definition of natural born citizen. Here's Cruz on CBS News responding to Trump.
This issue is a non-issue. The law is quite clear that the child of a U.S. citizen born abroad is a natural-born citizen.
It's not clear how this charge will sit with voters, especially in Iowa, where these two candidates are neck and neck. Well, today on Radio Times, the politics of this issue, what did the framers mean when they wrote natural-born citizen? Joining us is David Graham. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. He covers U.S. politics and global news. And David Graham, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Peter Spiro. He holds the Charles Wiener Chair in International Law at Temple University. He's an expert in the Constitution and citizenship. He's got a forthcoming book, At Home in Two Countries, The Past and Future of Dual Citizenship. And Peter Spiro, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here, Marty.
You're very welcome. Let me begin with you, David. And Donald Trump, I think we could be described as one of the original birthers. Just how incendiary is this comment that he made about Ted Cruz?
I think compared to some of the things he said about Obama, this is relatively tempered. And he's taking this stance of, oh, well, I'm just asking questions. I'm not saying he's not a citizen. You know, in that clip, you could hear going, some people are talking about it, and I think it's an important matter to bring up.
But is it a matter of saying it and not saying it that's at the same time?
I think that's exactly what it is, yeah.
And how do you think this is going to play out?
So I think that's an interesting question, and it's a little bit tough to tell now. You know, to my eyes, much of the reason that birtherism has had legs, and I think there's polling and analysis that bears this out, is it's a race issue. It's a way of talking about how Barack Obama is different in a way without saying, you know, he's black. And I'm not sure how that plays with Cruz. On the one hand, Cruz is Latino, and there's a racial element to that. On the other hand, some voters are going to be inured to the issue by the constant talk about it, and they're not going to buy into this. So I guess we'll see fairly soon what the effect is like.
Peter, let me get you in on the conversation. Based on what you know and we know about Ted Cruz, yes, he was born in Canada. His mother was born in Delaware. According to the U.S. Constitution, is he an American citizen?
Well, he's clearly an American citizen because his mother was born with citizenship, and she had satisfied certain residency requirements that applied at the time in order for citizenship to descend to him. So he's clearly an American citizen. The question here is whether a citizen born outside of the United States qualifies as natural born for constitutional purposes. The Constitution reads, "No person except a natural born citizen shall be eligible for the office of the president." And there's enough ambiguity in that archaic phrase to allow for these kinds of arguments to be made.
So going back a couple hundred years, what were the framers, what were they thinking at the time?
Well, there's not a lot of evidence from the constitutional debates. This was a clause that was sort of slipped into the final draft of the Constitution. But at the time, they would have been worried about a person that had conflicting loyalties, that had an allegiance to another sovereign. And this in an era in which loyalty to sovereign meant a lot more than it does today. So that's the kind of thing they would have been concerned about. And one can plug that concern into a situation like this to make the argument that they wouldn't have liked this.
Well, and I guess the question is, and again, you know, we don't exactly know what they were thinking. And of course, this was several hundred years ago. The idea that if you were born within the United States, I mean, was that something that, that would have meant something?
So that's one. It's one plausible interpretation of the original intent here, that it that one would have to have been born within the territory of the United States. Now, this, if that's what we should be caring about, that is the original intent. There's a lot of water under the bridge here, most of which points to Cruz's eligibility by virtue of his citizenship at birth, regardless of where he was born.
Let me go back to you, David. And actually, I do want to play another clip. And this came up a couple of years ago when John McCain was running for president. What were the questions that were raised about McCain himself?
Well, so with McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone, where his father was serving in the military. So the question is whether or not that qualified him as a natural-born citizen. Like Cruz, he was a citizen at birth, but not necessarily, some people argued, a natural-born citizen. So there's this weird split between the two phrases.
And what did the Senate do? There was something they did in a bipartisan nature to answer that question.
That's right. The Senate passed a resolution saying that McCain qualified as a natural-born citizen, which was sponsored by Claire McCaskill, a Missouri Democrat.
And was that unanimous, pretty much?
I believe it was.
You're saying yes, Peter.
It was, and had support from both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, who at the time were, of course, the front runners for the Democratic nomination.
Well, let me play a clip, and this is Senator John McCain, a recent interview last week, actually, on Phoenix CBS affiliate KFYI, agreeing that questions raised by Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump over Senator Ted Cruz is eligible for president. Let's give it a listen.
I think there is a question. I am not a constitutional scholar on that, but I think it's worth looking into. I don't think it's illegitimate to look into it.
So what has changed, David Graham, in the U.S. Senate?
I was a little bit surprised to hear McCain saying this, but I think there's a, you know, and I don't know the man's mind, but there are a couple things that occur to me. One is that McCain and Cruz have had a very contentious relationship. For a long time, McCain memorably called Cruz a wacko bird, and they battled over things. So I think there may be an element of sort of personal and political retribution in this. Another is that McCain has felt compelled to tack a little bit to the right in recent years because of the changing Arizona electorate. And the third thing is, you know, I think McCain argues, well, my father was in the service. I was born for that reason, but, you know, Cruz didn't have that excuse. But, you know, the law doesn't make any distinction between the citizenship in those two cases.
Peter, you want to add to that?
Well, I think this is a good example of the new phenomenon of trolling here in terms of of sort of putting something out on the table. There is interesting distinctions here. On the one hand, as David mentioned, McCain was the child of an officer in the U.S. Navy, and he was born in the U.S. Canal Zone, which at the time was a territory of the United States. On the other hand, there actually was a pretty plausible argument that he didn't have citizenship at birth because of a statutory glitch that was only corrected after he was born. He was born in 1936, and there was a statute passed in 1937 which retroactively extended citizenship to individuals in McCain's case. And so there actually was more of a question with respect to McCain in that sense than there is with respect to Cruz in terms of citizenship at birth. But again, technicalities here.
But what you're saying is this is an issue that has bubbled up, what, for since our founding?
Well, it's bubbled up mostly now in the modern era, and we can expect it to bubble up even more as, you know, in the wake of globalization, more people are going to have these kinds of transnational backgrounds. And so we can expect more of this. I think it's one reason to just get rid of the clause altogether.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, we're unlikely to get a constitutional amendment. But in the meantime, it's getting interpreted through the practice. So McCain, everybody clearly accepted him as having been eligible for the presidency, and we're seeing the same thing happening here with Cruz. And then these supply precedents for future cases. So if Cruz, God forbid, gets the nomination, everybody sort of falls in line, then the next time somebody who's born abroad with citizenship is in the running for a nomination, then people won't be able to raise the question in the same way.
David, going back to you and this notion of trolling, just so everyone knows what the definition is, I guess, is it just sort of saying, well, I'm only raising a question here? Is that a good definition of trolling?
Well, and a sort of disingenuous argument. You know, McCain is making this argument to take a shot at Cruz more than he is because he actually believes it. So it's sort of, you know, trying to get somebody's goat through this kind of thing. The one thing I'd add to what Peter said is
sure.
There are two interesting cases previously where George Romney and Barry Goldwater, Romney being born to American parents in Mexico and Goldwater having been born when Arizona was still a territory. And in both those cases, the consensus was that they were – you know, they were eligible to run for president.
You're nodding your head, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get these precedents through practice, and they, in effect, to the extent that there's ambiguity in the original intent of the founders and the drafting of the Constitution, whatever ambiguity there was in the Constitution itself is overtaken by these more recent precedents. It's interesting to see somebody like Cruz, who, of course, is a strict constructionist, originalist when it comes to constitutional interpretation. He's citing the George Romney and Goldwater precedent. So there's a sort of irony, there's a constitutional irony there, in addition to the more obvious political ironies in his being the target of these attacks.
David, it might be too soon to know how this is playing out among voters or even among the public. We know from people who are probably Republicans or maybe conservatives, a lot of them don't believe that President Obama is a U.S. citizen. Do you think this will have the same kind of cachet?
I think that a lot of that belief tends to spring initially from partisanship. My suspicion is that many people will be less susceptible to the belief that Cruz is not a citizen because Cruz is in their party. And I think this, you know, you get examples of this sort of bias coming from both parties. But I don't know. I mean, you know, there is a worry about immigrants, and there is obviously a great deal of concern about that in the Republican primary this year. And so that makes it an easier hot button issue for somebody like Donald Trump or other candidates to make into a big deal.
I notice what Trump says is, well, it might be the Democrats. I mean, if Trump is our candidate, then it might be the Democrats are going to challenge his citizenship. David?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you see, one of the interesting cases also of trolling, I think, Lawrence Tribe, the Harvard law professor, spoke to The Guardian yesterday and said, well, you know, according to Cruz's interpretation of the Constitution, originalist interpretation, he wouldn't be a citizen. But according to my interpretation as a progressive, I think he's clearly a citizen. So you see Democrats who are willing to troll on this matter as well.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about what did the founders mean and what does it mean today to be a natural born citizen? It has become an issue once again in the race for the White House, an issue, frankly, that Donald Trump has raised about his closest rival, at least in Iowa and some of these other states. That would be Senator Ted Cruz. Talking with David Graham, he's a staff writer at The Atlantic, and Peter Spiro, he holds the Charles Wiener Chair in International Law at Temple University. And you can join the conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about birtherism again. President Obama, as we know, has had his citizenship, his birth certificate challenged ever since he's been in office. Now the issue is back. Donald Trump claiming that Senator Ted Cruz is not a natural born citizen because he was born in Canada. We're talking about some of the politics of these charges and, frankly, what the framers meant when they wrote natural born citizen. Talking with Peter Spiro from Temple University Law School and David Graham, staff writer at The Atlantic. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And you can send us an email. I see a bunch of them there. Radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David mentioned Lawrence Tribe, who had a comment about this whole kerfuffle saying, and this is to The Guardian, despite Senator Cruz's repeated statements that the legal constitutional issues around whether he's a natural-born citizen are clear and settled, the truth is that they're murky and unsettled. What's Lawrence Tribe talking about here?
Well, so the reason he can say that is because there's been no court resolution. There's been no judicial resolution of this question. So Cruz can't point to a decision of the Supreme Court that says somebody who's born outside of the United States with citizenship is natural-born for these purposes. And so to that extent, it is unsettled, and it allows for these kinds of arguments because most Americans, when they think of constitutional interpretation, they think, well, it's a matter for judicial resolution. Donald Trump has sort of dared Cruz to seek a what's known as a declaratory judgment in court to resolve it. I think it's highly unlikely. Well, first of all,
why would he do that?
So Cruz couldn't do that because you can't just go to a court to get an opinion. You have to have an adverse party. There has to be a dispute. The one context in which he could do that is if a state elections commissioner refused to put him on the ballot for this reason. Then Cruz would definitely go to court to seek resolution. That's not going to happen. And to the extent that there are other people who want to try to get this before the court, courts will find that they don't have jurisdiction to get to this question. There's a doctrine called the doctrine of standing, under which you have to have some concrete individual injury in order to get a court to resolve a question. And this gives the courts an excuse really not to deal with this. Courts don't want to deal with highly charged issues like this. They much rather have them play out through the sort of ordinary process of what I'd call constitutional politics. And this is working out that way. So there's no need for the courts to get involved. And I think it's highly unlikely that they will.
And there were a number of years ago some people that went to court challenging President Obama's birth certificate or I guess his citizenship.
That's right. And all those cases got thrown out at a very low level. And I suspect that – actually, I'm confident that the same thing will happen with any suits that are filed with respect to Cruz's eligibility. There is actually a Democrat congressman from Florida – I think his name is Alan Graham – who has threatened to file a suit,
right,
which allows Trump to make
Grayson,
these arguments. Alan Grayson, that's right. Yeah,
David,
Grayson, who's another kind of trolling politician who loves this sort of thing. You know, his stock in trade is trying to get a rise out of people.
Let me go back to you, David. And this is something that Mitch McConnell said yesterday. He was on This Week. This issue came up. He, of course, is the Senate Majority Leader. I guess asked whether the Senate was going to do for Cruz what they had done for McCain. And he said, I just don't think the Senate ought to get into the middle of this. These guys are all slugging it out in Iowa and New Hampshire. We'll have a nominee hopefully by sometime in the spring. Does that just say something about Mitch McConnell or Ted Cruz or the Senate today?
I think it might say a little about all of those. I mean, it is the case that Cruz has very few friends in the Senate and has alienated many of his colleagues. It's true that the Senate is particularly tense now, and I think McConnell also is less likely to get involved in this sort of thing. Now, if some Democrats came forward and wanted to introduce a resolution declaring that Cruz was a natural-born citizen, it would be interesting to see whether McConnell would be willing to take that up.
Why is Cruz so disliked, though, among his colleagues?
Cruz is seen as sort of a grandstander, as somebody who has repeatedly done things that are bad for the Senate and for Republicans in the Senate in particular in order to raise his own profile. And I think that people just look down on that and want a more sort of collegial approach.
One thing that's really rankled me, and this has to do with Donald Trump and his birtherism claim. You know, he did apparently, allegedly send investigators to Hawaii to get to the bottom of this controversy. He has never revealed anything that his investigators found. I think we know why. But I often feel like he's gotten away with this. I mean, this was something that he was doing a couple of years ago, being, David, very public about it. And yet now it's all sort of gone away. He doesn't have to answer to his questions, his charges that Obama is somehow not an American.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think part of it is that when Trump was doing these things a few years ago, the political media generally regarded him as a sort of clown and an outsider who was out to get some attention for himself, but not a serious politician. And that was the case even early in this presidential run. But now as his numbers are high, he leads nationally, he leads in several of the early states. The press is sort of scrambling to catch up and doesn't quite know how to deal with the phenomenon of Trump and how to deal with it. You can check his facts and people don't care, and it doesn't moderate the way he talks. And so I think a lot of political reporters and pundits are sort of at a loss.
Do you have any thoughts about this, Peter? Might be out of your area of expertise. But.
Well, but it is interesting sort of how the birtherism lives on with respect to Obama, even after somebody like Trump, who's put some money into investigating, even after obviously came up empty-handed in terms of trying to prove that Obama was born outside of the U.S.
But is it just that this is sort of part of our country's suspicion of outsiders or people that are different, or is this just human nature?
It could be. And so, as David pointed out earlier on, that it dovetails with the anti-immigrant hysteria and that this feeling of being threatened by the outside. And even though there's no reason to think that Ted Cruz is going to be somehow a Canadian mole taking over the presidency, that it plays into those anxieties, really.
And do you think there's any reason or even appetite for another amendment to amend this part of the Constitution?
Well, I think that would be the sensible thing to do. And there were some semi-serious attempts in the 1990s, this in the context of the prospect of Arnold Schwarzenegger being a serious candidate for the presidency. Schwarzenegger, Austrian-born and a naturalized U.S. citizen, so not born with citizenship. With U.S. citizenship, and to the extent that he looks serious, Orrin Hatch, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, held some hearings on a possible amendment to eliminate the natural born citizenship requirement, and it didn't go anywhere in that context. Right. It would take a strong GOP contender who was not born with U.S. citizenship for it to happen. These days, it's almost impossible. I mean, the prospect of getting any amendment through a very high hurdle, so I think it's unlikely that it'll happen.
You think that's true, David?
I think that's exactly right.
And let me just read the – I always – when you come on, Peter Spiro, I always bring my handy U.S. Constitution here. So it says, no person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and has been 14 years a resident within the United States. I want to pick up on those 14 years. Has that had some legs, Peter?
So I think that was with respect to eligibility at the founding. So at the time of the founding, it says no person except a natural born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of the Constitution. There was some recognition that the talent pool, as it were, in 1789 would include individuals who weren't born with citizenship. Because the U.S., of course, there was no such thing as U.S. citizenship before 1776. And so I think that's what the 14-year residency requirement was aimed at. Mm. I mean, again, this is – imagine if we had a really super qualified candidate for the presidency who was born in Canada with Canadian citizenship and no U.S. citizenship. Would we want to preclude ourselves from being able to elect that person? I mean, this really makes no sense in today's context.
Does it make sense, though, David, in our political context, our political world?
Oh, man.
Just a segue off of that. No, go ahead.
I mean, I think there's – well, I don't know. I do think, you know, the point that you and Peter are both making about the sort of political reaction to this is true. And, you know, in some ways there's – we're talking about a kind of intellectual debate about, well, you know, clearly under the law, Cruz is a citizen by birth. Is he also a natural-born citizen? But I get lots of emails from people insisting to me, based on various sort of implausible readings of documents and law, that no, Cruz isn't even a citizen at birth. His mother isn't a legitimate citizen, so on and so forth. So it is obviously the case that people feel very strongly. Some people feel very strongly about this requirement remaining in the Constitution.
Peter, you want to add?
Yeah. So there's actually it's not a super strong argument, but there is a not totally frivolous argument that Cruz's mother, if she had acquired Canadian citizenship at the time of Cruz's birth in Canada that she would have lost her U.S. citizenship. And just in the last couple of days, a document has surfaced which includes her on a list of persons eligible to vote in Canadian elections. And I don't think this is a strong argument, but it's the kind of argument that could give this kind of attack some legs, in the same way that with Obama, once it became clear that he had actually been born in Hawaii, they turned to the fact that he might have had Kenyan citizenship at birth, and so he was a dual citizen, and the framers would never have contemplated that. Of course, Cruz was a dual citizen, an unknowing dual citizenship up until last year, I think.
2014, I think.
2014, that's right.
I mean, you're new, but is it so unusual to be a dual citizen these days?
Now it's completely commonplace. At the time of the framing, it was considered to be a moral abomination. The framers would never have contemplated an individual who had dual citizenship being eligible for the presidency.
I mean, just because a matter of loyalty and
breaking
from the—
Loyalties were taken super seriously back then. In a way, now it's more a question of personal identity and expressing our many different selves. And more people, you know, many millions of Americans now have dual citizenship.
David, just let me go back to you quickly, and then we got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. How much do you think this has to do with Iowa and the fact that Cruz is based on a number of polls, is at least a little bit ahead of Trump? How much do you think that's why Trump did what he did?
I think it has a lot to do with it. Trump, for a long time, was not attacking Cruz. They had this sort of non-aggression pact. And then as the polls tightened in Iowa, suddenly Trump decided it was time to open up on Cruz. And Trump's campaign has sometimes looked like they're kind of, you know, picking things up at random. But I think there's a real... real thought to this. I mean, it plays right into a sort of anti-immigrant bias. And so I think Trump's campaign sees this as a very effective tool for creating a wedge in Iowa and alienating voters from Cruz.
And Cruz has said, I like Donald Trump. I respect Donald Trump. He's welcome to toss whatever attacks he wants. Let me get Matthew from, looks like Princeton, to join our conversation. Hi, Matthew. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're
and
welcome.
I'm a lawyer in New Jersey, and I had a question for the professor.
Sure.
Martin Van Buren was the first president actually born in the United States. Were there any presidents? So far from my quick research, I can't find anyone who was not born in any of the 13 colonies. Perhaps someone in one of the territories may have been. What role could that play in the interpretation? And second, and what is the Senate's role in interpreting the Constitution? I know that's part of constitutional law, even though the Supreme Court has the final say after Marbury versus Madison. So those are my two questions.
Fair enough. Matthew, thanks for the call. Peter, go ahead.
So I think there's some question raised about Chester Allen Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
You said, David?
Yes. And, yep. But I am much less interested in the sort of 19th century history, because I think that's much less determinative of the answers to these questions. And it's more recent history that we naturally turn to for interpreting the Constitution, at least in the absence of court decisions. On the question of birth in the territories, we have the Goldwater precedent. So he was born in Arizona, which at the time of his birth was a territory, was not a state, I think 1959 even. Mm. No. Little early. In any case, Barry Goldwater was born in Arizona before it was a state, and there was a consensus view that he was eligible for the presidency. On the Senate role, there's no formal role for the Senate in interpreting the Constitution. I think in the absence of a interpretation from the courts, it's as a formal pronouncement, it carries a lot of weight, especially when you have something like the unanimous resolution in favor of McCain's eligibility. So I think it sort of adds to the other elements demonstrating a consensus with respect to eligibility. The same sort of consensus, even if we don't get such a resolution with respect to Cruz, I think we're seeing the emergence of the same consensus here.
David, are you a Chester A. Arthur expert?
I am not. I knew about this challenge, which I think is interesting simply because it goes back pretty far, but I'm not sure I can add a great deal that Peter didn't.
Facebook comment from Susan. Trump does say and doesn't say everything he says. He's like Satan whispering in one's ear. But he is, I have to say, and David, I'll put this to you, but Peter and I were talking about this before going on the air, which he is very clever at putting things out, not entirely owning them, but making them an issue. And I don't know whether the press is complicit in this, but how do you see what he does?
I think that's right. It's been interesting for me to watch Trump because there are a lot of folks who think that what politicians do is very easy and they could imitate it. And you see them coming in from business and other places and trying to be politicians and just flopping horribly often. And Trump is somebody who really seems a natural at this. He's very good at getting the press to pay attention. He's immune to fact-checking. And I think and he's very good at changing the subject quickly to the next thing. In a way that tends to keep himself from getting too much backlash. So that's right.
But I'm not asking you to criticize your brethren, but I mean, it sounds like, and it often looks like he's giving the press a run for its money.
I think that's right, and you know, it depends on the sort of coverage. I don't want to call out television news too strictly, but there is. You know, I think television tends to follow the flashy object more assiduously. A lot of print journalists and online journalists, I think, have been doing great work trying to debunk things that Trump has said and criticizing them. And the fact is, it just doesn't make a lot of difference. I mean, I think you get a really polarized view where many people see Trump's lies and deceptions for what they are, and other people refuse to believe that they are lies and deceptions.
Mm. Almost up in a break. Looks like you want to add something, Peter.
So on the an example of that with the Trump's challenge to Cruz to get a declaratory judgment, of course, he could go get – that would be the response is you want to clear this up,
Donald, you go
to court and get a declaratory judgment. He would have standing – to challenge the state elections commissioners who have put Cruz on the ballot. So he's the more appropriate party to bring this case.
Well, let's take that break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Peter Spiro. He holds the Charles Wiener Chair in International Law at Temple University, an expert in constitutional law, or the Constitution, I should say, and citizenship. David Graham joining us by Skype, staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news. We're talking about natural-born citizenship and birtherism. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We're talking about what it means to be the president. A candidate must be a natural-born citizen, and that's according to the U.S. Constitution. But what does this term mean? What did the founders mean? What does it mean today? And again, talking with David Graham, staff writer at The Atlantic, and also with Peter Spiro from Temple University Law School. 1-888-477-9499. During the break, I asked Peter Spiro, do we need to know something about the Naturalization Act of 1790? Do we?
Well,
does that help our conversation here?
It's a piece of contemporaneous evidence, contemporaneous to the drafting of the Constitution, that the founders thought that someone born outside of the United States with citizenship qualified as natural born. It was the first statute extending citizenship to the children of U.S. citizen fathers outside of the United States. So if Trump wants to get really originalist about this, the fact that it was through his mother that he's getting his citizenship would probably have caused the founders some problem. It's such a great demonstration of evolving constitutional understandings, and it's so much fun, really, to throw this back at somebody who is so persuaded of his righteousness when it comes to interpreting the Constitution through an original intent.
Let me get to, it looks like Ted from Bensalem to join our conversation. Hi, Ted. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi.
Hi there.
I think we have an hypocrisy issue with Cruz. He, like Trump, was an Obama birther. Neither of them questioned Obama's mother's citizenship, and yet Cruz now claims he's natural because his mother was a citizen. He did not extend the same to Obama. That makes him a hypocrite.
Well, Ted, let me see if David Graham wants to respond to your comments. David?
I'm trying to remember exactly what the comments that Cruz made were about Obama. I'm blanking on the details. But I think it is, you know, there's something to be said for the fact that this is a phenomenon that the stoked and is now having to deal with. So that's certainly true.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, I think so. It makes it so tempting again to make something of this if you're on the Democrat side. I think it probably would be better just to take the high road here and as distasteful as Cruz's political views are to most Democrats, they should just concede this by way of making birtherism go away for the future. And maybe Republicans now will think twice about pushing this now that they see one of their own suffering the consequences of having played this up against a Democrat.
Do you think this will go away? I mean, we are a much more, as we know, diverse country, certainly than we were when we were founded. But
I think the Cruz candidacy will end up answering this in a pretty definitive way, that there will be a clear consensus supporting his eligibility and that will once and for all settle this question of those born with citizenship outside of the United States being eligible for the presidency.
David, do you want to weigh in on that at all? And then we'll get back to our callers.
I mean, I think that's very plausible. I would expect that because, as Peter said, there, you know, we have a sort of more globalized base of citizens. There will continue to be cases that are not as clear cut. And at least for the foreseeable future, there's going to be, I think, a fuss about it. Just because of the sort of currents in the Republican Party that Donald Trump has demonstrated, you know, that may be not a 30-year phenomenon, but certainly a 10 to 15-year phenomenon.
But Peter, do you think this is a dangerous game to play? Questioning someone's citizenship?
And that way it is, because you never know when your favorite candidate is going to have, 10 years from now is going to have the same kind of problem. So you have to play the long game, I think, on this kind of question. And also, obviously, the birtherism is more a Republican phenomenon than a Democrat one. And so even though it's tempting to take advantage of it against somebody like Cruz, especially to the extent that he was a birther himself, it just, again, taking the high road here is probably the smarter long-term political and constitutional strategy.
Ted, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Ed from Lawrenceville has to say. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Actually,
you started to address my question, but I'd like to hear a little more about it. I'm curious about the status of his father, who is probably a Cuban citizen.
And
everyone says, well, gee, his mother is a U.S. citizen, but if his father was not, and you know, doesn't that make him equally a Cuban citizen as well as a U.S. citizen?
It's a good question, Peter.
So I don't know the details of Cuban citizenship law. He clearly had Canadian citizenship at birth, and as Marty mentioned, he renounced it effective in 2014. It was the reason he had citizenship at birth is because it just takes one citizen parent who satisfies certain residency requirements in the United States to pass citizenship to a child born outside of the United States. So the fact that his father has said that he had Canadian citizenship at the time of his birth.
Even though he's born in Cuba.
Even though he's born in Cuban. I don't know what whether he also maintained his Cuban citizenship, but it's obviously a complicated story. I mean, one thing, again, on the immigration side, Cruz's family immigration history is a very complicated one, and it might behoove him to be a little more tolerant of those who have complicated immigration stories, which is something he doesn't seem inclined to be.
Picking up one thing you said, so in terms of as it stands now, if you're born outside the country, but one of your parents, doesn't matter if it's your mother or your father, if one of your parents is an American citizen, you're essentially considered an American citizen.
So the statute in place now is if that citizen parent has been 5 years resident in the United States, two of which were after the age of 14. The statute that applied when Cruz was born it was a 10-year residency requirement, five of which had to be after the age of 14. And Cruz's mother was in her 30s, and she clearly satisfied those residency requirements. Obama's mother would not have satisfied those residency requirements.
Go ahead. Go down that rabbit hole.
If Obama had been born in Kenya, he actually would not have been a citizen at birth. His mother was 18, and so she had not been satisfied the 5 years residency requirement after the age of 14. I mean, it shows how these sort of technical aspects of citizenship law, they shouldn't really be determining right. who we can vote for as president.
And we should say that the president was born in Hawaii
not
in Kenya, just so there's
not
no,
to fuel any
there's
flames
no
on this
confusion
one right
here.
Well, this is the great irony of this.
Go ahead, David.
This is the great irony here is that Obama was, in fact, born in the United States and Cruz was not, and yet there's been much more outcry about the Obama issue than the Cruz one, which I think is indicative of the fact that this is largely a matter about partisanship rather than deeply held beliefs about the ins and outs of immigration law and constitutional law.
I noticed that Donald Trump also questioned Ted Cruz's father, who I believe is an evangelical, saying, and this is a quote here, this is to you, David, not a lot of evangelicals come out of Cuba. That was something that Donald Trump said about Cruz's dad.
Yeah, this is a surprising thing for him to say. You know, Rafael Cruz is a very outspoken evangelical minister. And I think these are examples of how Trump is picking up on little things to show that Cruz is a little bit different. He can emphasize the fact that Cruz comes from another country. He can emphasize his otherness in these ways. And you know, the citizenship status is one of those. Mentioning Cuba in ways like this is another one of those. Rather than some sort of deeply held objection.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, talking about natural-born citizenship or citizen and the sort of birther issue that seems to ebb and flow. Let me get Ray from King of Prussia to join us. Ray, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It was reported on one of the three major networks in the Sunday morning talk shows yesterday that Ted Cruz, in fact, kept his Canadian passport until 2014 when he gave it up because he obviously was going to run for president. I wonder what impact it would that would have on this discussion.
We touched on that earlier, but David, do you want to weigh in on that at all? Do you think that will become an issue?
Yeah, I mean, this was, I guess, the sort of the major question, the first round of Ted Cruz birther questions. So Cruz says he never held a Canadian passport, actually, but he was a Canadian citizen. And he says that he was unaware that he was a Canadian citizen until it was brought up a couple years ago, at which point he renounced the citizenship. Now, you know, as Peter pointed out, you can be a dual citizen and still be eligible for president as long as he was, in fact, a U.S. citizen by birth, which he would be under the statute.
Mm. Peter, just to underscore that, I guess.
Yeah, so there is no constitutional prohibition on being a dual citizen and being eligible for the presidency. Cruz's experience does highlight the fact that there are a lot of unknowing dual citizens walking around that a lot of children of immigrants, for instance, to the United States, are citizens by birth of their parents' country of origin. And so a lot of people, other than those who are thinking about running for president, it's actually an advantage to get another citizenship to the extent that it enables you to travel and work in places like the European Union. And so it's this is the one context in which politically, obviously, it's still, I think, a liability to have an alternative,
but not for the rest of us. You're saying
not for the rest of us.
But a difference between a passport, and this is such a basic question, a difference between a passport and citizenship.
So one can have citizenship without having a passport. I think the fact that Cruz didn't have a passport gives pretty good evidence that he was unaware that he actually was a citizen. It would be a lot harder for him to deny that if he was carrying a passport around.
We have an email from Matthew. I can't vet this. He says, Cruz was a Cuban citizen at birth under Cuban law, according to Article 29, Section 2 of Cuba's citizenship law. So
the answer to that is so what? I mean, you know, really, does that mean that he's going to be doing Raul Castro's bidding as president of the United States? I think that's unlikely, right?
But is this a, you know, a one-week story, do you think, David Graham?
Well, I thought it was a one-week story when I originally wrote a piece debunking the idea that he was ineligible, and that was in May 2013.
I read that, yes.
So I'm not really sure. I suspect that something else will capture attention and that this will not – if Cruz loses the Republican nomination, this will not be the reason why.
Let me get Robert from Philadelphia, see what he has to say. Robert, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have you, Robert? Robert says, what is the status of people who lived under the Article of Confederation? Is it different than after the Constitution was written, e.g. Alexander Hamilton? I'm looking at you, our constitutional scholar, Peter Spiro.
So almost as a matter of faith, I'm weak on the original understanding. But again, that's why the text of the Constitution allows for those who were citizens at the time of the adoption of this Constitution, why they were eligible, even though they would not have been natural-born U.S. citizens because the United States didn't exist at the time they were born.
Mm. Speaking of Alexander Hamilton, I mean, talk, you know, this is a Broadway show now, right? Kind of a rapping Alexander Hamilton, which is, I would think, from your perspective, that's a great thing.
I haven't been. The tickets on StubHub, I think, are a little above my pay grade
pretty,
at the moment.
Pretty pricey there. We only have a couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye. So David, what's happening in our U.S. Congress these days?
As regards
just
the
sort of, well, just, you know, what are they doing?
I guess we're getting back into the new year and starting to rev up some of the standard fights. You know, there's a discussion on gun control pegged to the president's executive actions and a few other issues. But I suspect we're going to have a fairly quiet year in Congress just because people don't want to do anything contentious on the eve of the election. And also, several members of the Senate are out on the campaign trail a lot.
Well, and I'm assuming, I know Obamacare was sent to the president to either sign or not sign the veto of Obamacare. And obviously he did what everyone expected. Any preview for what he'll be saying tomorrow night at the State of the Union?
So he's spoken about how he wants to, or his advisors have said he wants to really make this a kind of big picture speech. So I think everyone's accustomed to the laundry list of policy proposals that we get in the State of the Union. This, he says, will be a very different speech, kind of setting a legacy for himself and speaking really more to the audience watching on TV and listening on the radio than the members of Congress in the room.
Hmm. Is this a teachable moment for us, Peter Spiro? I mean, we've had this hour-long discussion about natural-born citizen and some of the politics of that. Is this a good moment for all of us to
absolutely
whip out our constitutions?
Especially on this question of constitutional evolution as it occurs outside of the courts, I think it is very teachable because the kinds of evidence that are being used on both sides here don't involve decisions of the Supreme Court. And yet, I have some confidence that we'll arrive at an answer here even without the Supreme Court, an assist from the Supreme Court.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Peter Spiro, always a pleasure.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Marie.
Nice to have you here. And he holds the Charles Wiener Chair in International Law at Temple University, an expert in the Constitution and citizenship. He's got a forthcoming book coming out later this spring called At Home in Two Countries, The Past and Future of Dual Citizenship. David Graham, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And he's a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.